We are alive. Yes. Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. I'm your host, Jorge Martin, and we got an invitado de lujo, a return guest, one of our first return guests, mi buen amigo, one of the lead beat writers for the covering the Las Vegas Raiders, in where I'm glad he's in some air conditioning right now because I know it's hot over there right now.
and getting hotter.
Adios mio. Vinny Bonsignori, I mean, just he's one of the lead voices on the Raiders, covers the team for the Las Vegas Review Journal, also the host of the weekday huddle on Raider Nation Radio. So Vinny, como siempre, bienvenidos, welcome. And it's so great to see you again.
And likewise, Jorge, you know that we go back a long way. Always a pleasure to join you and to talk about the Raiders and to visit with the fans and all your listeners. It's a privilege. Thank you so much.
No, awesome. Awesome. Well, you know, first off, this is your first real off season, it seems like. I know last season was such a crazy one for you, for everyone. How is that kind of, you know, return to some semblance of normalcy with OTAs and you got your mandatory camp coming up?
Yeah, and even just talking to the players, the sense of normalcy for them, you know, being out in OTAs, it's a critical time of year for teams. We all see teams winning or losing football games in September, October, November, December, but really teams are built at this juncture, this time of year. Look at the Raiders. They've already made some roster moves these last couple of weeks. Why? Well, they've, you know, gotten a chance to really get a look at their roster, who they have, what each position group looks like these last few weeks, culminating with the minicamp next week. So, you know, it's a great chance for the coaches and Mike Mayock and the talent evaluators. All right, where are we at cornerback? Do we need to bring somebody in, you know, at tackle? How do we feel about wide receiver? They're getting that access right now and that those eyeballs on this roster and this team, it wasn't afforded to them last year because of COVID-19. And just talking to the players, understanding the step that wasn't available to them last year. No excuses. They're not going to make excuses for what happened and the collapse over the second half. But there's some parts of what happened last year, especially defensively with that young defense, that you can at least make a connection to the lack of offseason that they had. So everyone was really excited about being able to get on the field and to utilize this time of year, in spite of the vote that we saw about a month ago or so at the behest of the players' union. The Raiders themselves voted not to take part in this time of year, but that was kind of a vote out of obligation and to kind of show the union that they were working with them. But individually, and the players that I talked to, there was no chance that the Raiders weren't going to get on the field and utilize this time of year.
Yeah, especially there's so many young players who are, you know, we're going to talk about guys looking to make the jump. And, you know, on the offensive scheme, I mean, Gruden has been as the head coach for a few years now, and I think this is what his fourth year, I believe. And so he's, you know, now it's time, you know, he's had the same quarterback over that time, drafted or signed the skilled players. You know, how I'm going to get into individual position groups in a second, but how are you kind of looking at the kind of the makeup of the offense, kind of a balanced offense, maybe a little more pass heavy? You know, how do you look at that?
Well, ironically, I just finished up writing an article. I think it's going to run on Sunday in the Review Journal, Las Vegas Review Journal, specifically about the offense and, you know, very narrowly Kenyon Drake and what he's going to mean to this offense and a little bit also of that offensive line. If you remember and you think about it, the Raiders scored the 10th most points in the NFL last year, mm-hmm. whereas they gave up the third most points defensively. So what was supposed to be a very defensive-centric offseason turned decidedly offensive, surprisingly so, with retooling the offensive line, adding somebody like a Kenyon Drake when the Raiders already had Josh Jacobs. And when you look at it on the surface, well, they scored the 10th most points in the NFL and, again, gave up the third most points in the NFL, you would have thought that defense would have been the exclusive point of focus. But when you really look at the numbers last year offensively, it was almost miraculous that they scored as many points as they did. Their run game per carry average was 23rd in the NFL. By Pro Football Focus, they had, I think it was the 23rd ranked run blocking group. They had the 17th ranked pass blocking group. There were a lot of factors that were actually working against the Raiders. And then also in the red zone, they were 23rd in terms of touchdown percentage. They scored a touchdown 54% of the time that they were in the red zone, which was 23rd in the NFL. That's not really that good. So the fact that they were able to score the 10th most points in the NFL in spite of some issues that were working against them was pretty significant. But I don't think that they felt like that was repeatable, especially with the points. And certainly improving in the red zone was dubious that they were going to be able to do that without some changes being made offensively. So what did they do on the offensive line? They got much younger. They sacrificed, obviously, some experience in trading Rodney Hudson and Gabe Jackson and Trent Brown. But what they believed they did was get younger, more durable, more athletic, perhaps more powerful, and maybe even a little bit more reliable. When you look back at last year's offensive line, they had four snaps together, the projected starting unit. Ooh. And those were the first four plays of the season opener. From that point on, whether it was Trent Brown, who only played four games, or Richie Incognito, who only played two games, or all the various other injuries and factors that came into play, only four plays from the starting group that they expected to have to start the season. So they felt like they needed to get younger, a little bit more durable, and they did. They bring in a guy like Kenyon Drake, who can play in conjunction with Josh Jacobs, in lieu of Josh Jacobs. He's somebody that they can line up at wide receiver, you know, with Josh on the field, somebody that they believe is going to create some matchup problems that they believe will help in areas like the red zone. I think Bryan Edwards, the second-year wide receiver from South Carolina, and Henry Ruggs, the second-year wide receiver from Alabama, mm-hmm. I think they expect big step forwards from both of those players. Foster Moreau getting healthy, and just watching him at practice a couple of days ago, seeing how prominently he was being utilized in the red zone, I'd expect a big step forward for Foster now that he's completely healthy. So while the offense is still Derek Carr and it's still Darren Waller and it's still Josh Jacobs, there was some subtle tinkering that was going on, and also the hope of some improvement by Henry Ruggs and Bryan Edwards and some of those young players, so that this is a more efficient offense. They may not even score as many points as they did last year. I think scoring might go down a little bit in the NFL, only because fans are not going to be back a part of it. And when you go on the road, you're not going to be able to do things as free and easy as teams did last year. So it might not be reflected in the amount of points, but I think the efficiency relative to the rest of the NFL could increase based on the changes that they made and some of the improvements that they're hoping for.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that, not to get off topic too much, the fans in the stands is going to be a big difference. There's going to be that home field advantage, which, you being in Vegas, you know that matters.
Yes.
That matters to those people, to the sharps that are making the bets and everything like that. But I think I'm really looking forward to that, to get a little more sense of normalcy there, and also just to hear the roar of the crowd again. I mean, just seeing it happening in baseball and seeing it in basketball again is just, it's just special. Thank you for
those meetings. Yeah.
There were go ahead.
Yeah, there were so many times last year, Jorge, where I was at a stadium, whether it was on the road or here at Allegiant Stadium. Just, I mean, I remember driving to New England to their stadium. I don't know if you've ever been in there, but it's like in the middle of a forest, basically. And there's a certain patch of road where if you don't get it at the right time, you're going to be stuck in traffic, because it's literally the only road getting in there from the Rhode Island side, and which is where a lot of teams and people stay when they come to watch a game. And so if you catch it at the wrong time, you're going to be stuck in a massive traffic jam. Last year, I flew in. There was nobody around. And I was thinking to myself, I kind of would rather have a traffic jam right now if it meant the fans being back in the equation, because they mean so much. And really quickly, three times last year for the Raiders, a minute 43 left against the Kansas City Chiefs, 19 seconds left against the Miami Dolphins, and in overtime against the Chargers, the Raiders offense left the field with the lead. They scored points to put themselves ahead and handed it over to the defense. And I would sit there at Allegiant Stadium, this was at home, thinking to myself, what would this place sound like right now and be like right now against the Chiefs, against the Dolphins, against the Chargers, trying to make life difficult for Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert and at that time Ryan Fitzpatrick of the Dolphins. But instead, it was just eerily quiet. You could hear whatever, everything that was going on in the field, you can hear it. And as a result, you know, and not to make any excuses for the Raiders, but Patrick Mahomes drives him down the field. Ryan Fitzpatrick drives him down the field. Justin Herbert drives the Chargers down the field with no noise, no anything, and scored the winning points. And I was just thinking to myself, how much of a difference would that have made in three critical games for the Raiders? And they were 2-6 at home last year. They don't, obviously, they can't have that repeat this year, but they are expecting a full Allegiant Stadium to play a big role in like I said, making life difficult for the other team and maybe helping them in key moments.
Yeah, just imagine if two of those games, you know, they're because of the fans, they hold on. That's 10-6 instead of 8-8. So
yeah, exactly.
Probably looking at the playoffs. So yep. Incredible. Well, you know, so much with the offense starts with, you know, with Derek Carr, number four. And he was, you know, he was in a sense underrated last year. He was number 11 in passing yards, number 11 in touchdowns, only 27 touchdowns, only threw 9 interceptions last year. And you, as you mentioned, the Raiders were number 10 in points scored on the season. So, you know, you've got, you know, this now fourth year in the offense, even and too much to, you know, as Chris Sims loves to say that, that John Gruden never met a quarterback he didn't want to replace. but you know, he's got these weapons. What can, you know, he's not a quarterback who's going to run, but what can we look at looking ahead this year?
And he actually did run a little bit last year. He picked up some important first downs. It was something that John Gruden has really been on him about. And feels like he can. He's never going to be, you know, one of the mad runners in this league. He's never going to be a Sam Darnold who could tuck it and run it, or Patrick Mahomes, or you know, any of these, you know, Lamar Jackson. But he can, in key moments when they need a yard or need a couple of yards, do it. And that was something that John Gruden had stressed, and something that Derek Carr added to his repertoire last year. But you're right, the offense, you know, he is the leader of this offense, and I do think that he's a bit underrated myself. You know, obviously, when you look at the quarterback, you're going to look at wins, and unfortunately for the Raiders, the wins haven't been there, so where do you point first, the coach and the quarterback? And even though, to me, it hasn't necessarily been Derek's fault, he gets his share of the blame. But when you really look at last year, he played really well. And when we talk about not having any fans in the stands, one thing that it allowed for me being in the stadiums was to really hear him operate at the line of scrimmage. And he's pretty smart in that regard. He's talented in that regard. And I can say that now because I can literally hear it. You could see it and hear it last year in key moments where he was switching out of plays, getting the Raiders into the right look, the right matchup against whatever the defense was. And so, if you're a Raider fan, you should be encouraged by that. And I think, you know, the Raiders have tried to continually improve the weapons around him. We mentioned some of the players that they expect to be prominent this year. It's kind of the perfect situation for that kind of a quarterback, because he's sort of like a point guard type quarterback and very smart. There's going to be plenty of opportunities this year, whether it's Darren Waller or Jacobs or Ruggs or Edwards or Kenyon Drake, or whoever the case might be, where you're going to force defenses to make hard decisions on who to really focus on. And invariably, that's probably going to leave somebody that's pretty darn good in a great matchup for the offense. And I think Derek Carr is kind of that great quarterback to be able to figure out where that matchup is and exploit it. So if I'm a Raider fan, I'd be pretty encouraged by that and excited about that. And yes, John Gruden has never met a quarterback that he didn't want to either trade or trade for. But, you know, actions kind of speak louder than words. We are in year four in the John Gruden era, when everyone kind of thought and assumed that Derek Carr, immediately after John Gruden took over, would be the first guy out, because John Gruden was going to go get his guy, go to get his veteran quarterback. 4 years later, this offense has done pretty much a complete overhaul. And the one guy that's still standing and still here and still thriving, really, is Derek Carr. So that pretty much tells everybody what John Gruden feels about him. Now, look, if Aaron Rodgers or Deshaun Watson or somebody like that truly became available and was within the Raiders, scope of being able to have, having the right assets and the money under the cap and all that sort of stuff, obviously any team would be interested in upgrading at the most important position on the field. And those two players probably obviously represent upgrades. So would they be interested? Who wouldn't be interested? But the key is they believe that they have a quarterback that could get them far. And of the quarterbacks that might be better than he is, who is available? How are you going to get a hold of that person? How are you going to replace Derek Carr with somebody better? That's hard to do unless, again, somebody like an Aaron Rodgers or Deshaun Watson truly became available.
Yeah, I don't know if that's really going to happen. And one of the things I remember you told me last year is that he was going to be taking some deep shots, and he famously won that game against the Jets, you know, with that long bomb to Henry Ruggs, which obviously cost someone his job. But again, he's still got to make the play, and it was and again, you know, not really just taking the conservative shots there. So. Loved seeing that.
Doubled up there. The Raiders doubled up, more than doubled up. Their touchdown total from on big plays. The red zone offense definitely needs to be improved. Their touchdown efficiency definitely needs to be improved. But they also did kind of quietly more than double their long touchdown total. And that speaks to, you know, Derek Carr and his willingness to throw it long. And what we talked about this last year, I remember that conversation about how, you know, in the past, I don't think he believed that he had the necessary weapons to do that. Mm-hmm. And so throwing it long was just to satisfy somebody up in section 204 because he's screaming at Derek Carr to throw it long. But where is it going to lead to if you don't believe that you have the guy on the other end that's going to be open, that's going to be there, that's going to make the catch? You're just taking a chance that it's going to get an interception or a turnover. I think he felt last year, and I think he's going to continue to feel this. There's other players now that he can trust to be there and to make the catch. And, you know, for that reason, those numbers went up last year, and I expect that trend to continue this year.
You touched on the running backs, in the fantasy community, people lost their minds when Kenyon Drake signed with the Raiders. And people were like, I'm not drafting Josh Jacobs and the blah, 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 this and that. And I just, and I thought, okay, un momento, slow down. And I started to think about it. And you tell me if there's something to this. One of the top, there's so much about duos in running backs, Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram a few years ago in the Saints. More recently, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt last year with the Cleveland Browns. Is it something like, you got a Josh Jacobs in that banger run, between the tackles, kind of like and then like Nick Chubb. And you've got Kenyon Drake kind of, obviously taking some carries, but also being more of a threat in the passing game, a la Kareem Hunt. Is this something that could be, it looks like they're envisioning for the next season?
Yeah. And somebody that I tap into pretty often over at the practice facility in Henderson, over their headquarters, don't forget we play 17 games this year. And think of it this way. Josh Jacobs, his first 2 years, hasn't gotten through a complete season healthy yet. I think it was 13 games 2 years ago, 15 games last year. In both of those seasons, down the stretch, he was playing with some injury factor going on. And the Raiders understand that. Now you add, I know it's just one more game, and fans are like, well, it's just one more game. Well, it's already tough sledding come December as it is with the 16 games. You add one more game, that's just another week to deal with, physical issues. So the way the Raiders were looking at this kind of multi-leveled, one, they really believe that Kenyon Drake is a weapon that they're going to be able to utilize at all points of the field. So it's something that he brings some different, attributes to the table, above and beyond, what Josh Jacobs brings. So they believe that they're going to be able to complement each other really well. And they have an Alabama connection. They're friends. I don't think there's going to be any awkwardness in terms of any of that. But just as importantly, the way they're looking at it, especially with that 17th game, they're in a better position this year than they have been in many years, really. And obviously since Josh Jacobs got here, to get him and Kenyon Drake into the fourth quarter and late in games in the best physical condition possible, with more left in the tank. And then certainly as you get into December and, you know, for the Raiders purposes, maybe even beyond, be able to get both of those players deep into seasons in the best physical condition as possible. Is there going to be some give and take? Probably. Do I know firsthand now, being a beat reporter of an NFL team, how important fantasy football is to fans? Yes, I do. And so even some of the frustrations associated with that, when somebody's numbers go down or carries or touches or whatever the case go down totally. But from the team's perspective, they're trying to win football games. They're trying to get through seasons and games as healthy as possible in order to have the maximum, of their best players at key moments. That goes for like a guy like Max Crosby, bringing in a Yannick Ngakoue, and maybe Max's snaps go down. He played 200 more snaps last year than he did the year before, and all of his efficiency numbers, everything dropped last year. I think part of it was he was hurt, as it turns out, and I think part of that was the result of he just played too many snaps. And so, you know, you'll probably have a fight on your hand with Max Crosby about taking some of those snaps off, but in the long run, it's going to help him. And the snaps that he does play, I think he's going to be in a better position to deliver more efficient snaps rather than some of the empty snaps that he was delivering last year because he was just gassed out. So whether you're talking about Josh Jacobs and bringing in Kenyon Drake to kind of carry that load, or Yannick Ngakoue along with a Max Crosby, a lot of this was just to deepen the roster, deepen rotations, and allow for more efficiency on a snap by snap basis with players that have more left in the gas tank.
And I know how the fantasy community could get. Well, I actually witnessed it on your Twitter the day that Josh Jacobs said he was going to play, and then all of a sudden, I remember you were giving like a blow by blow of he's not on the field, he's not on the field for warmups and everything like that. I was just I was entertained by it.
Yeah,
even though
that was the
even
massive though I had bull him, job. People were legit mad at that.
I was listening to the podcast during the week. They were just I sat there. I was like, okay, you know what? Fine. Okay, it wasn't cool. But then again, how many people who were either talking or listening had maybe sent a tweet or yelled something at a game because a player didn't perform up to their standards on the, on
exactly.
So I'm like, you know what? It's fine. It's fine. All good on that one. But and you're right about the 17th game, man. Imagine 20 another 20 car crashes for someone. So
right, exactly.
And you know, you were talking about injuries, and they were really a big factor in Bryan Edwards and Henry Ruggs just really not being able to. I know Ruggs especially being the first wide receiver off the board when someone like Justin Jefferson has such a huge season. It was almost rookie of the year. When you look at these two, how important are they to maybe kind of being that X and that Z receiver, to be the guys that really kind of take that big step forward and take a little bit of the load away from Darren Waller?
Yeah, and the Raiders really need that. And glad you mentioned the injuries, because they were a factor. And both players suffered some leg issues early in the season. And, you know, say this pretty often, for any player in the NFL, but specifically for a young player and especially a rookie, when you have to jump off that train a little while, to get better and to get healthy, it's not like the train just stays there waiting for you. It's chugging down the line. And when you get back healthy, you gotta catch up to it. And it's not always the easiest thing, because a lot's changed in the time that you've missed, whether it's, you know, Derek Carr developing a trust factor with somebody else and the offense rolling, you know, without you, and then trying to implement you back in, or your command of the playbook or your comfort level or whatever the case might be. It's sometimes difficult, and it sometimes takes a little while to get reacclimated to things and to catch up. And I think both of those issues, set Henry and Bryan back a little bit. The good news, I think, for Bryan Edwards finished the season pretty strong. He had a nice game against the Denver Broncos to end things. he went into the offseason with that in his mind. And I think that Henry Ruggs did just enough, did enough individually, even though it wasn't what he probably wanted it to be. But if you look back at some of the numbers, with the ball in his hands, he did fairly well. He had an impact on how other defenses defended the Raiders, so he helped in that regard. But I also feel like, what happened last year with him between the injuries and between, seeing the NFL at this level and seeing what he really needs to work on to really take a next step. It's very defined. He needed to get stronger. He needed to get, with that strength, more explosive. Needed to work on some of the pass, route, the nuances of that. Coming down with the ball, securing the ball, coming down with both feet, on the field. It's very subtle things, but obviously important things. And I think he understood, seeing it firsthand, that he needed to master those things. And it seems like he really devoted himself to doing just that in the offseason. And if you talk to anybody over at Alabama, where he came from, and the Raiders obviously did all their due diligence, one of the things that always stood out about him from people like Nick Saban and everyone else over there was how hard he worked and how much he cared. So I wouldn't worry about that part of it holding him back. Whatever his ceiling is, I think he's going to get to because he wants it that much and is willing to put the time in. Watching him at OTAs, he definitely looks bigger and stronger. And I think he's going to be able to play faster as a result. And also his understanding of the offense is going to allow him to kick it into that higher gear where he's not so much thinking, but just playing. And I think that's going to help. But bottom line, it has to happen. And it has to, they both need to take step forwards. And if they do, this offense has a chance to be pretty special. But we have to wait. It's one of those questions that we're really not going to be able to answer until the real lights go on in September.
Could you see either one of them being kind of a more volume receiver, maybe seeing about 100 targets this year, like Waller,
who was 100? That's a lot. I think, but I just think that somebody like a Henry Ruggs, 70, 80 or more, or just by per game. Let's just talk about touches. I think he's a guy that you got to get the ball to 9, 11 times a game, somehow, some way, and let him do his thing. And I think, especially early on, for him to become more of a confident player, for Derek Carr to be more confident getting him the ball, and for John Gruden having more faith in him calling his number. So I think early on, the Raiders really need to make it a priority to try to get him implemented. And then, of course, it's on him to be where he needs to be, to make the catch, to produce when the ball is in his hands, whether it's on a fly sweep or a screen pass or a crosser or long or whatever the case might be. He needs to produce. And if he does, that's just going to escalate everything. Derek Carr is going to have more confidence in him. Henry's going to have more confidence in himself. John Gruden's going to have more confidence in him. And if he could get off to a quick start, I think that would be something that he can build on. And then by the end of the year, you look back and you start looking at those numbers, I think they'll increase as a result big time.
Yeah, I keep looking at him as somebody that that maybe his stock is a little bit down, and I'm thinking, okay, I want to keep an eye on him. I want to grab him as one of my backups just in case he blows up, just because there's a lot of good in this offense.
Yeah.
You lost Nelson. The Raiders lost Nelson Aguilar after last season, who had a wonderful season. Replaced him with John Brown, who definitely has had his moments in Buffalo the past couple of years. Hunter Renfro is still there. Zay Jones is getting. Could one of them be a sleeper that kind of emerges?
I think everyone's gonna have a hand, and I'll throw Willie Snead in there from Baltimore. He's somebody that the Raiders. Hard nosed, tough nosed kind of a player that, I had him on my radio show, and he was going on and on about the Ravens way of doing things and just the hard nosed, competitive, do whatever you got to do, blocking everything. That sort of toughness and resolve that the Ravens are built on, he's bringing to Las Vegas. But in addition to that, he loves this offense more than the offense that he was playing with the Ravens. There's some things that the Ravens do because of Lamar Jackson and his skill set. That if you're a wide receiver, might not be, you know, the best for you necessarily, but he's coming to an offense now that a lot like what he played with in New Orleans, where he had some really nice years. Mm-hmm. So he feels like he's going to be able to fit right in here and also bring that toughness that that was built in Baltimore. So somebody like a Willie Snead, and there's a lot of, that's the thing. There's a lot of weapons here. There's a lot of potential weapons as well. And you know, the question becomes, how do you satisfy everybody? How do you get everybody all their touches? And somebody actually, I was with JT DeBrick the other day, JT DeBrick, and he asked me about that. You know, how are they going to be able to do it? And I remembered covering the Rams and Robert Woods and Brandon Cooks and Cooper Kupp and Tyler Higbee and Todd Gurley. And, you know, at the end of the year, all of them had their numbers, right? And it just seemed like on a weekly basis, you know, Robert Woods would get 100 yards. The next week it was Cooper Kupp. And then Brandon Cooks would go off. But by the end of the year, all three of those wide receivers, I think until Cooper got hurt, were all on target for over 1,000 yards receiving. You know, over 70 to 90 passes caught. Todd Gurley obviously was, you know, an offensive player of the year candidate. So somehow, some way, they were able to figure it out. And I think the Raiders are kind of built along those lines. Obviously, John Gruden being kind of a you know, a tutor to Sean McVay.
Oh, that's right.
Sean McVay learned on him. Yeah. So I think I think the same thing can exist here in Las Vegas. And so the most important part of it, that everyone will be happy because everyone's going to get their touches.
Well, definitely one guy who's going to get his touches is Darren Waller. 145 targets last year, 107 receptions. It looks like he's just in the prime of his game. More of the same this year. I mean, he's like Kelsey. He's like Kittle. It seems like he's the top target for the offense, even though he's a tight end.
Yeah, I don't see that changing much. But, you know, maybe it behooves them to change just a little bit. You know, maybe the numbers come down just a little bit in terms of the target, and that would probably mean Derek Carr developing more of a chemistry, more of a trust with some other guys. I think the way the Raiders are going to look at it is, you know, at some point it becomes whatever you got to do to win a game. And so, you know, from a game-to-game basis, situational basis, how defenses are defending guys, what their focus is going to be, that's going to sometimes dictate, you know, who gets the most touches in any particular game. But I almost think that it would help a little bit if he was less of the focal point. You know, he's so good that he's going to get his, and he's going to, put up big numbers, and he's going to have a big impact. But they really do need Henry Ruggs. We keep mentioning his name, and Brian Edwards and those type of guys. Foster Moreau, who the Raiders have big plans for as well, to help really balance it out and again, force defenses to make tough decisions on who they're going to defend, so that at any point, you know, the Raiders can get up to the line of scrimmage and feel confident that they have somebody that they're going to be able to go to make the defense pay for whatever it is that they're trying to do.
Yeah, because I think even Waller was saying that he could see that Ruggs' speed opened up the field for him. So
yep.
You're right. I mean, yeah, it does take a village. It takes everybody. You know, as my kids love to say, teamwork makes the dream work.
Exactly.
And you talked about the offensive line. How surprised were you at just the, you know, three new starters? I mean, that feels like a complete overhaul of what they were doing. I think some of your tweets were kind of like, wow, kind of around when that was happening. How surprised, and as you mentioned, was it just the idea of getting younger and maybe improving a little bit in certain areas of the passing? I mean, of the blocking?
Yeah, Trent Brown was gone. You know, there was no way, unless he took a massive, massive pay cut. You know, that's the guy who played 16 games over the last two seasons. I'm no mathematician, but that's half the games. And he got paid $38 million, $37 million for that. The last year for the Raiders was really, really frustrating with Trent Brown, not having him out there and wondering why and all that type of stuff. So he was almost for sure gone. Rodney Hudson and Gabe Jackson, that's a little bit different. But, you know, the Raiders knew that they were going to have to pay Colton Miller, and they wanted to get that taken care of sooner rather than later. got to remember that offensive line last year, even with Colton still on his rookie deal, was the highest paid offensive line in the NFL. And the way the Raiders kind of sized it up was, you know, highest paid offensive line in the NFL, the offensive line, because of injuries, because of all of that, you know, only really getting the four plays that they got out of them, you know, they didn't get the return. And so what they were thinking was, with Colton needing to get paid, trying to get a little bit younger, a little bit more athletic, a little bit more durable perhaps, but then also smoothing it out in terms of the money. It would have been, there was no way they could have given Colton the contract extension while also paying Rodney Hudson, while also paying Gabe Jackson, while also paying Trent Brown. Plus they needed that money too to be able to go and fill some other holes. The good news is, you know, they felt like in Andre James, they had an heir apparent to Rodney Hudson, and that with Richie Incognito coming back, and John Simpson and Denzel Good, they felt pretty good about, you know, filling Gabe Jackson's spot at right guard, and that with a deep draft in tackles, they would be able to get out of either that first or second round with somebody that they could plug in and play at right tackle to start the season. So it's a little bit of a gamble. You know, we'll have to see how it looks on the field. But they have a lot of trust in Tom Gable, their offensive line coach. They, you know, while Andre James hasn't played a whole lot, he's been in the Tom Cable lab for a while. You know, covering football now for a little while, these coaches kind of know what they're looking for and what they need. I remember a few years ago with covering the Rams, they had Alec, a linebacker, Alec Ogletree, middle linebacker, who had three straight years of like 90 or more tackles. And they had just given him a pretty decent contract, but they needed to figure out ways to manage the money a little bit better. And so they're thinking about trading Alec Ogletree. And so Sean McVay calls Joe Barry, their linebacker coach, and said, "Hey, look, we're thinking about trading Alec. Are we good behind him? Is there somebody there that we can count on, you know, to fill the role?" And Joe Barry, I did a story on this. Joe Barry is like, "It's covered. There's a Corey Littleton is ready to go. We'll be fine." And so Corey Littleton steps in and delivers, you know, becomes a Pro Bowl linebacker for the Rams. So even though we may not see it, they kind of see it, you know, what's going on. And I think that's a similar case with Andre James. Again, the lights go on. We'll see how he handles it. But they feel pretty good that they're going to get a good season out of him. The key now is Leatherwood. And, you know, he's looked pretty good so far in OTAs. Excited to see what it looks like when the pads come on. But so far, so good with Alex Leatherwood.
Yeah, a lot of people who were kind of flummoxed on draft day about the pick, but you know, it's always one of those. Mike Mayock does know, you know, he was on that on that sound stage for plenty of years. Yeah. One of the most respected people in the game at that point, so you got to trust in that. Last kind of football related question: the Raiders, were their defense was bottom 10 both in passing and receiving last year. I targeted them a lot in daily fantasy toward the end of the season whenever a player was going against them, but they definitely invested some resources on that side of the ball. Do you kind of see them coming a little bit more toward the middle, maybe somebody that people really have to think twice about before they try and target their fantasy players against them?
Man, that's pretty much the key to everything. You look at the Raiders defense, they got 14 and a half sacks from their defensive line. It's almost embarrassing to say that. That's like such a low number from a defensive line, their entire defensive line, the entire defensive group, 21 and a half sacks. That's just not going to get it done. They were third worst in forcing turnovers. They were third worst, I think it was, or second worst, somewhere along that, in getting teams off the field on third downs. That's like three strikes you're out. If you can't be bad in two of those areas, let alone three. And really, you can't be bad in any of those areas. But the Raiders were really bad in all three areas. And you know, even when the Raiders were 6-3 last year, you know, and headed to a playoff run, you know, doing my due diligence, you know, checking in, the message consistently, even at that point, even at the high water point, got a lot of work to do. Got to figure out how to get a better pass rush. Got to get more turnovers. And one thing that I think fans, what frustrates fans, and rightfully so, but the reality of the situation is sometimes you got to roll with what you got at that point, you know. And some of those issues, getting more pressure on the quarterback, creating more turnovers, you know, doing better on third down. Sometimes it's something that you got to push off to the offseason. You're just not going to be able to really fix it in any kind of a meaningful way during the season. You're playing with what you have. And I say that because even had, like we talked about earlier, even had the Raiders made a play here or a play there against the Chiefs or the Chargers, mm-hmm. or the Dolphins, and finished with 10 or 11 wins and gotten into the playoffs, it wouldn't have camouflaged what they knew needed to be done. It would have been nice to make the playoffs, but it wouldn't have changed the fact that they knew that there was a lot of work that still needed to be done on the defensive side of the ball. And none of those changes wouldn't have happened. Like they wouldn't have gotten caught up in, oh, we made the playoffs, everything's good. Because like I said, even at 6-3, it was like, man, we got a lot of work to do. So there was a self-realization and an awareness that it looks good. 6-3 is great. But there's some issues here that need to get dealt with. And I think, you know, like I said, sometimes you have to push that off until the offseason. And they did. I think Ngakoue makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. You know, the players that they added along the defensive line, Quentin Jefferson, Solomon Thomas, Darius Phylon, all of those guys, if they do what they're capable of doing, what they've just done really historically, I think they're going to make, a nice impact. Cleve Farrell had a pretty good year last year, in spite of what Raider Nation sometimes thinks. I think he's going to get better. Carl Nassib still has he's, I don't know what happened to him last year. Same with Corey Littleton. Maybe it was a scheme. Maybe it was a new environment, whatever the case might be. He's too good not to put up some numbers that are going to be able to help. Same with Corey Littleton. And I think Gus Bradley being the key to sort of the change. If you were to talk to John Gruden, Gus Bradley was probably the defensive coordinator he wanted when he first started here in Las Vegas. But Gus Bradley was under contract with the Chargers, so there's no access to him. I think the way it's all worked out, he got his guy. And you could already sense a change just in the interactions and how players are talking about their defensive coordinator and their defensive staff. There were too many times last year where guys were not where they were supposed to be. It just seemed disconnected, that mm-hmm. defense. And, you know, some of that has to go to the coaches and the messaging and the communication, and something wasn't getting through. And I think that in itself, with Gus Bradley, Ron Miles, the new defensive secondary coach, and Richard Smith, the linebacker coach, Rod Marinelli now working for and with Gus Bradley, I don't think that that's going to be an issue. I think this is going to be a much more connected defense that plays, you know, better in that regard. Will it translate to them stopping teams when they need to stop teams and getting more sacks and turnovers? We'll have to see. But it's almost hard to believe that they can repeat what they did last year and not improve on it.
Yeah, I know Raider Nation's definitely on going for that, and definitely hoping for that. You've had Allegiant Stadium to yourself for the last year.
Yeah,
is there one thing that fans need to check out when it opens up this year?
Well, man, it's just it's funny because when you drive by there, I don't care what time of day it is. It could be in the middle of the night, 3 a.m. in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, whatever. There's fans out there. Raider fans are out there, whether it's to visit, the team store that they have there, or just to take it all in and just take pictures. Kind of the same thing with their practice facility in Henderson, which is right off the 15 freeway when you're driving up to Las Vegas. If you get off at St. Rose Parkway, you can drive right by it. And fans do. They're out there taking pictures. They're out there kind of taking it in. And so what's really cool for me, it's not anything in particular. It's just the whole notion that Raider Nation has a stadium and a home that they're proud of. And that pride is truly, truly being expressed by how many fans just go over there in their Raider gear, just kind of taking it all in. There's a place now for them to be proud of. That wasn't the case in Los Angeles at the Coliseum. It certainly wasn't the case in Oakland. at the Coliseum there, but it is now. And I think that, you know, once fans get in there and see it and be a part of it, that pride is just gonna escalate, you know. And it's really cool because, again, this has been a long fight for the Raiders trying to get a home that the whole nation can be proud of, and they've definitely done that.
Probably since we were teenagers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, multiple places. So,
right.
As we saw the 30 for 30 from a few months ago, that the Al Davis and Pete Rozelle thing. So
yeah, exactly.
So last one, this is kind of a fun one that I love to ask people. I don't think I asked it to you last time, but you've lived in Southern California. Vegas is a great place for eating too. Favorite taco meats.
Oh man. There's a restaurant out here called Flaming Juan's Fajitas. And there's one in Henderson, and there's one over on Tropicana in Las Vegas. And if you guys come out, anyone who comes out here, whether it's for tacos, fajitas, whatever, that is the place to go. So Flaming Juan's Fajitas, and then thank me later. Trust me, it's good.
Any ones that are recommendations? Any meats that are recommendations?
I'm a meat guy. I like my meat. So, no, I mean, they have, you know, obviously they have.
Looks like we lost Vinny. Oh, just as we were about to hear what his favorite meat was. Well, everybody, hopefully he comes back. We can let him kind of close everything out. Definitely make sure you're following him at Vinny Bonsignor on Twitter, and make sure you're listening to him on The Huddle at on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM. And also make sure you're reading his articles and his features. He's got great coverage in the Las Vegas Review Journal. So just a great guy, Vinny B. Can't thank you enough for doing this. This is you're a fantastic friend. I'm going to call you after this and thank you personally. Again, everybody, I'll make sure to put on Twitter what his favorite meats are, just to kind of finish everything off. But eso es todo for our show, and make sure you're following us on Twitter and Instagram at FamiliaFFB. You can find me at JorgeMartin17. Make sure you're following our original content at FamiliaFFB.com, as well as our FamiliaFFB Facebook page. Vinny B, otra vez, my dear friend, muy, muy buen amigo. Muchas gracias. Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. Raider Nation, holler at you. I wore black for you guys, so make sure you're listening. We're going to have an article on this in the coming days. But thank you again, everybody. And remember, todos somos familia. Salud.